From Iowa Public Radio News, I'm Jeff Schmidt in for Ben Kiefer. This is The Exchange. Today on the program, the game of summer, baseball, with three Iowans who work in the game. First up, a look at minor league baseball with Iowa Cubs chairman and principal owner Michael Gartner and Cedar Rapids Colonels general manager Jack Rader. They'll discuss what it takes to keep their sports businesses vibrant during lean economic times. Then we focus on the big leagues with Des Moines resident and major league umpire Tim McClellan. He'll discuss his 27 years in Major League Baseball. The national pastime next on The Exchange, but first news from NPR. This is The Exchange on Iowa Public Radio. I'm Jeff Schmidt in for Ben Kiefer. Today, Iowa and baseball. Later in the program, a conversation with Major League umpire and West Des Moines resident Tim McClellan. The 27-year veteran will join us from Los Angeles, where he worked last night's San Francisco Giants-Dodgers game. We'll talk with Tim about his experiences behind the plate for the past three decades and get his thoughts on whether or not instant replay should be part of the baseball landscape. But leading off today's program, a view of the game from the minor leagues. Minor league baseball is on its way to another record-breaking year in attendance. According to minorleaguebaseball.com, through the end of June, 21.5 million fans attended minor league games across the country, an increase of over 900,000 fans from the same time last year. Conversely, Major League Baseball attendance is down for the second consecutive year. About.com Baseball reporting 19 of the 30 big league clubs with fewer fans this year as compared to last. My guests in helping examine the minor league game in Iowa are Michael Gartner, chairman and principal owner of the Iowa Cubs, the AAA affiliate of the Chicago Cubs. He is also a member of the State Board of Regents. Michael joins us from our Iowa Public Radio studios in Des Moines. Good afternoon, Michael.
Good afternoon. It's nice to be with you.
And in our Iowa City studio is Jack Rader, general manager of the Cedar Rapids Colonels, the Class A affiliate of the Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim. Thanks for joining us, Jack.
Thank you.
Michael, I want to start with you. All of these numbers indicate that Major League Baseball attendance is on the rise, something that you can verify from Principal Park in Des Moines.
Minor league attendance? I can't verify it this year. We've had so much rain and so many rainouts, including the July 4th weekend. But absolutely, the pattern is increasing, and I don't know how we'll end up the year, whether we'll be ahead, a little behind of last year. But certainly in the last 10 years, our attendance has gone up dramatically by several hundred thousand. So, yeah, it's on the rise.
Michael, when we break it down, is it as simple as affordability, the reason for minor leagues remaining popular?
Well, I think part of it at the AAA level, you have what we say is Major League Baseball at minor league prices. Minor League Baseball is certainly more family oriented than Major League Baseball. It's certainly more affordable. It's more fun, you can go to a game in Cedar Rapids or a game in Des Moines cheaper than you can take your family to a movie. So that's part of it, and it's got more of a wholesome atmosphere than Major League Baseball does.
Jack, from your perch at Veterans Memorial Stadium in Cedar Rapids, do you concur on the affordability factor?
Yeah, I certainly do. I think that with the economy, of course, hitting the skids last year, and much like the problem in Des Moines, for the past several years, we've really been in a bad weather pattern. And what goes through Des Moines usually comes through Cedar Rapids. Mm-hmm. So that's been a little bit of a deterrent for us. But overall, things you'd have to say have been pretty good considering the economy and the amount of rain that we've been getting. And I think it goes back exactly to what Michael said, that minor league baseball is fun, it's affordable, it's a good product, and it's a real option for people maybe not wanting to drive as far as often. So our walk up the last couple of years has been terrific, and I think part of that does have to do with the economy.
Michael, you've been with the Iowa Cubs since 1999. How has the minor league game changed during the past 10 years for you?
Well, I think baseball, the playing on the field is probably gets better every year as you have these extremely talented young people from all over the world deciding that baseball would be a good career. That's number one. Number two is I think that, as we say, it's an enormous family-friendly outing. You know, it goes through phases. When I was a kid, I first came to baseball in Des Moines in 1947, and it was the same atmosphere then, and then times change, national moods change. But right now, I'm with Jack. It's on the upswing because it's, like I said, it's just it's wholesome. And if you have the right partner, it's all a partnership business. You have to have a partnership with your fans. You have to have a partnership with your advertisers. You have to have a partnership with your city, and you have to have a partnership with your big league affiliate. And if you have all those, plus a good general manager like Jack or like Sam Burnaby, the fans get a great deal.
In discussing some of those changes, talk a little bit about the entertainment factor. When I was a kid heading to the old Vets Memorial Ballpark in Cedar Rapids, it seemed like it was just the pull of the game, the players. Today we hear the entertainment factor playing a major role in attracting fans to the ballpark. How has that worked its way into the way you do business, Michael?
Well, you have games on the field between innings, but that's historically. There used to be, when I was a kid, there was a guy named Max Patkin who was mm-hmm. a clown who went from place to place like the San Diego Chicken does now. So you've always had that. But then as parks get far more sophisticated, you know, we have a playground and we have the Kiss Cam like Cedar Rapids has and things like that. We have basically a little television station up in our press box where we have 10 or 15 interns working every night, and we have cameras going around. We telecast the game so that if you're standing in line at the concession stand, you can see what's going on, or if you're in one of the suites. So, yeah, it's a lot more sophisticated from an entertainment standpoint, from, again, games for kids to play and varieties of food, no longer just a hot dog and a Coke and a beer. But everything has changed over the years and gotten that way. But, you know, it's just better. It's more attractive to more people, both grandma and grandpa and the two-year-old as well as mom and dad.
Jack, you've worked as the general manager in Cedar Rapids since 1991. Compare the operations of the, was it the Reds that you took over that year?
Correct.
As compared to the landscape you have now in Cedar Rapids.
Well, it's a big difference. And again, I agree wholeheartedly with Michael. It's a better product on the field. One of the big differences to me is the stadiums, the facilities. When I first started back in the early 80s, you didn't have the facilities that you have today. And I think that's made a huge difference. And I refer to it affectionately, but it was kind of the mom and pop operations back in the early 80s when I started. And I was part of that in Wausau, Wisconsin. There were two people in the front office. Well, you can't compare that to what's going on today. This is a big operation. All of these are big operations, depending on the market size. But there's just so much more to it. When I started in Wausau, I believe our budget was $200,000 in Wausau in 1982. And Cedar Rapids, of course, were probably much closer to a $4 million budget. So that in itself tells you the change in the game.
We'd like to invite Exchange listeners into the conversation. What about your baseball experience in Iowa? Have you avoided that trip to Wrigley Field, maybe on Chicago's north side, or Target Field in Minneapolis, Busch Stadium in St. Louis, for an adventure at a minor league park? Does the cost of the minor league experience attract you? We want to hear about your minor league experience. 866-780-9100. You can also email us at theexchange@iowapublicradio.org. You both mentioned stadiums. Michael, Principal Park has undergone a number of changes. Where along the line did stadium quality become such a major factor for the minor leagues?
Probably about the time that Principal Park was built. That coincided with the time that the new stadium was built in Baltimore, and that brought in a whole new design of fan-friendly, well-designed, handsome architecturally stadiums. We now have the third oldest stadium in the Pacific Coast League. You have to remember, oddly enough, we're one of the 16 teams in the Pacific Coast League, which is kind of hard to grasp until you remember that Iowa's also the state with 10 teams in the Big 12 and 12 teams in the Big 10. So we don't know math or geography. But the stadiums. Our stadium was built for $13 million in between 1991 and 92. It would probably cost $55 million to replicate it today. But fans and communities demand things like that. And that's one reason now that the newer stadiums, like the one going up in Omaha, the new one in Allentown, are smaller than the ones that were built 15, 20 years ago.
Is Principal Park holding up? Is it still in good condition?
Yes, it's a beautiful stadium. It's got a great site where the two rivers come together, and you stand there at the home plate and sit behind home plate, and you look at the Des Moines Capitol, at the Iowa Capitol. So it's beautiful. It's been well maintained. We have a good partnership with the city. We've put millions of dollars into it in the last 10 years, and the city has put a lot of money into it. It's a major attraction for Central Iowa. We're second only to the state fair in the number of people we draw as a arts, sports, or cultural institution in the state of Iowa.
Jack Rader, your club faced a big decision back turn of the end of the year 2000 and a referendum process in Cedar Rapids. Talk about that, and essentially, is it safe to say save baseball in Cedar Rapids?
Well, I think it did. There are some teams in our league that are still playing in older stadiums, but they're very few and far between. The interest in Cedar Rapids baseball expanded greatly with the building of the new facility. It was a fun project, really, from start to finish, and it wasn't easy. We actually started that process back in 1996 and lost on a 1 cent sales tax, then came back a few years later and went after it again, and we were successful the second time. But it was a long process, but it was well worthwhile. Our attendance went from about 125,000 in the old stadium to roughly 180,000 in the new facility. So it's a pretty big jump, and it has remained pretty consistent.
Exchange listeners, we'd like to invite you into the conversation. What about your baseball experience in Iowa? Give us a call, 866-780-9100, or you can email us at theexchange@iowapublicradio.org. We want to hear about your minor league experience. We're talking with Michael Gartner, chairman and principal owner of the Iowa Cubs, and Jack Rader, general manager of the Cedar Rapids Colonels. Major League Baseball umpire Tim McClellan joins us on the second half of this program. We're talking baseball today on The Exchange from Iowa Public Radio.
Say, Willie, say hey.
Say who?
Swinging at the plate, say hey.
Say who?
Say, Willie, that Giants kid is great. When he hits the ball, it's long gone, man. Hits it farther than camp begins. Swings the bats like a little lead pipe. When they reach the ball, it's over right. Say hey,
say who?
Say Willie, say hey,
say who?
Swinging at the plate, say hey,
say who?
Say Willie, that Giants kid is great.
He runs the bases like a choo-choo train. Swings around second like an aeroplane. His cap flies off.
And this is The Exchange on Iowa Public Radio. Jeff Schmidt in for Ben Kiefer. Today we're talking Iowa and baseball. Michael Gartner, chairman and principal owner of the Iowa Cubs, our guest, along with Jack Rader, general manager of the Cedar Rapids Colonels. Also taking your calls on your minor league experience. Let's go right to the phones to start this segment. Jack is with us in Des Moines. Good afternoon, Jack.
Good afternoon. Thanks for having me on the show.
Yeah. Talk about what Iowa Cubs fan I would take it.
Oh, I'm a baseball fan. I've been going to minor league games. I was born and raised in Iowa, and I used to go watch the Waterloo team. And now that we live in Des Moines, we love going down and watching the Iowa Cubs. I also do go to Chicago to Wrigley Field regularly and see that. But there, it's a different experience at a minor league team. And the Iowa Cubs in Des Moines is just a terrific experience. I can't talk it up enough to people to go out to their minor league teams and see it. You'll see great baseball. It's affordable for a family to go out. We went to a game a couple weeks ago that was just, it was major league level at minor league prices, and we absolutely loved it.
Jack, we appreciate your comments today. Michael Gartner.
I'd like to say he's no relative of mine, but I'd welcome him into the family.
Well, let's talk a little bit about prices. Talk about ticket prices and somehow maybe compare it, Michael. Maybe not all specifics, but it is affordable when we break it down to a major league ballpark.
The general admission at our ballpark is $7 for adults and $4 for kids, which is cheaper than a movie. A movie ticket in Des Moines is $9. A state fair ticket is $10, mostly for general admission. Iowa Barnstormers ticket is $12. Furthermore, there's always discounts. You can go to the Hy-Vee store or bring in a can of this or bring in a wrapper from that, a Kraft Singles wrapper or something. And so anybody who wants to come to a ball game can come very, very inexpensively. And we don't make our money on tickets, obviously. You make it on advertising. You make your money when you make it. You make it on advertising. You make it on food. You make it on sales of sweets and things like that. But if you just want to come down to a ball game and sit in the bleachers or sit in the grandstand and watch, it's very, very inexpensive.
Let's head right back to the phones. Chris is joining us from Solon. Chris, talking about his minor league baseball experience.
Yeah, thanks for having me on the program. I wanted to comment on minor league baseball at minor league prices. I like the experience of minor league baseball in that you may have a few more errors here and there, but the kids play hard. They play the whole game, and that's enjoyable to somebody who's been to probably a dozen major league ballparks. My wife and I used to go to the Rockies a lot when we lived in Colorado, and sometimes, the guys just pack it in. I know the other night the Colonels scored 14 runs in an inning when they were down by a ton, and just keeping on playing, that's one of the things I like about minor league ball.
Chris, thanks for the comments today. Jack Rader was commenting on that. All your years in baseball, and you said you'd probably never seen, 14 rally for the Colonels?
No, I haven't. The only thing I could compare it to was 1997. We were playing Burlington in a playoff game, and we went into the bottom of the ninth inning trailing 12-5 and scored 9 runs. A 3-run homer won it 14-12, but never 14 runs, especially down. We went into that inning down 11-3. At one point, we were down 9-0, then 11-2, 11-3, came up and scored those runs. The manager, Ted Kubiak, of the other ball club, said he's been around baseball, obviously a former major league player for a number of years, and he had never witnessed anything like that. So it really was an extraordinary day and one I'll never forget.
Michael, when we talk about team affiliation, is it possible to measure the impact of your club being associated with a Midwest-based big league club as popular as the Chicago Cubs?
Sure. There's not a quantitative number I can give you, but I can tell you that, first of all, the Cubs are very popular nationwide. Wherever we go and play, when we play in Fresno or when we play in Tacoma or when we play in Omaha, we outdraw their average attendance. And that means that they like the Cubs and they want to come and see the Cubs. Second of all, geographic proximity is of enormous help to you, especially when you're on the AAA level, when you have so many people going up and down. During the course of a year, we'll have 150 transactions of players going up and down or out. And so being very close to Chicago makes it very convenient. It also makes it convenient for their executives, their scouts, their player development people. We always have one or two of those at the ballpark every single night. A couple times a year, Jim Hendry, the general manager, is in. O'Neary Fleeta, the farm director, is here 3 or 4 times a year. So there's always somebody here that makes it convenient. Plus the fact that the Chicago Cubs are televised on a superstation, WGN. So, yes, it's a huge benefit for us to be a Cub affiliate, which we've been for 25 years, and it's quite a good benefit for the Cubs to be an Iowa Cubs affiliate.
Jack, your affiliation with the Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim, not a team close by, but you have the longest affiliation with a big league club of any team in the Midwest League. How has that worked for you?
It's been great. We're on 18 years right now. When this contract is up, it will be 20 years. And there is a disadvantage probably that they're not close. But on the other hand, there's so many other positives with the Angels. We seemingly see all their top prospects. We've got 12 former Colonels that are actually on the major league roster for a Class A ball club. That's pretty incredible. We're in the fourth consecutive year of being in the playoffs. And maybe even the bigger thing is the philosophy of the two organizations mirror each other and what they believe the players mean to a community, giving back to the community and those type of things. So overall, it's really been a terrific marriage for us.
Michael, the spotlight somewhat showing on Des Moines in the past couple of days. All season long, the gentleman at the helm of your club has been Ryne Sandberg, the Hall of Fame second baseman, has worked as your field manager this year. Chicago Cubs manager Lou Piniella announced yesterday he will retire at the end of this season. Many are speculating the big league club will look to Sandberg as the next manager. Talk a little bit about your view of Sandberg as a manager and if you think he is ready to take over on the north side of Chicago.
First of all, he's a terrific guy, and his wife is a terrific woman. They've become deeply involved in the community in the year they've been here, particularly helping the homeless to a greater degree than any previous manager. Second of all, he's the only Hall of Fame member who's managing in the minor leagues right now. So that's a huge plus for our players as well as for our fans. Third of all, he's just a nice guy. He's very quiet. He's easy to get along with, and it's a great asset for us. He comes out at about 25 minutes before game time every night, and he signs autographs. Everybody lines up, deep long line, start the gates open to get his autograph. I call it Rhineland. It's always in the same place down there, and he patiently signs autographs, talks to people, signs bats. It's been a great plus for us. Whether he's ready to manage in the majors, of course I think so, but that's not my decision. I stay away from baseball decisions. Because it's not my business. My business is the venue. The Chicago Cubs make all those decisions, and whatever their decision they make, I'm sure will be the right one. But Ryan is a spectacular person, as he was a spectacular baseball player.
You talk about the transactions between your club and the big league club. I believe Carlos Zambrano scheduled to make an appearance in the next few days for the Iowa Cubs.
Yeah, scheduled to. You never know. I say that's a Cubs decision, and you never know what day it'll be, when it'll be, if it'll be. But he was down here yesterday, and I presume he'll pitch tomorrow, but who knows?
Before I say goodbye to you two, I wanted to ask one final question. You've devoted a lot of your life to the game of baseball. Jack, I'll start with you. You're retiring at the end of this year. The majority of your life has been baseball. What got you into this profession?
Well, I've always loved the game. I mean, from the time I can remember, I've always been a baseball fan. And when I look back at it, people ask me about the work, and I always say, the worst part of my day is when someone tells me it's time to go home. So, you've been in the right business, and 30 years, I wouldn't change a thing. It's been great, and I've loved every minute of it.
Michael Gartner, the source of your passion for this great game?
My dad started life as a sports writer, as did I. When baseball came back to Des Moines in 1947, when I was 9 years old, and he started bringing me down to the games, and I just developed a love for it then as well as Jack did. And my dad only made me do two things in his entire life. He made me learn how to type, and he made me learn how to keep a box score, and they're probably the two most valuable things I ever had to learn. So it gets in your blood. It's I can't think of a better life than to be a guy who owns or runs a minor league baseball team. It's when the Wrigleys bought the Chicago Cubs in the 1930s, I guess it was Philip Wrigley said, baseball is too much of a business to be a sport, and it's too much of a sport to be a business. That's the way minor league baseball is today.
Michael Gartner, thank you for your time today. Jack Rader, we appreciate it.
Thank you.
This is The Exchange on Iowa Public Radio.
The ball game, take me out with the crowd. Buy me some peanuts and crackers, Jack.
This is The Exchange from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Jeff Schmidt in for Ben Kiefer. Thursday on this program, we discuss the environment with the newly appointed EPA administrator in charge of Iowa and surrounding states. We'll find out how the agency's push for climate change legislation could affect our state. Then Rich Leopold, the director of the Iowa Department of Natural Resources, discusses a recent state audit that shows the DNR is not enforcing more than a dozen state laws. We will find out why. Ben Kiefer hosting The Exchange Thursday at noon. Today we are talking baseball. The national pastime on The Exchange, and the plan for this final segment was to go to Tim McClelland, 27-year veteran Major League Baseball umpire. He is working the San Francisco Giants-Los Angeles Dodgers series in Los Angeles. In fact, I just got off the phone with Tim. he is unable to join us. I guess you can set this aside to breaking news. Last night, a very controversial contest between the Giants and the Dodgers. There were some ejections, some pitches thrown inside and some batters hit, and some problems with some of the rules with managers leaving the mound and trips to the mound, and it affected the outcome of the ball game. Tim is meeting with his umpire crew right now in their Los Angeles hotel room, preparing a report for Major League Baseball. This is interesting because the first thing I did when I got up this morning, I turned on the television and it was highlights of the Giants-Dodgers series, and there was Tim in the middle of a controversy. And I thought, well, this is going to be great. We're going to be able to hear about this on the radio, but we are not. Tim apologized, says he will join us again. We will be able to get insights into West Des Moines resident Tim McClelland, 27-year veteran of Major League Baseball as an umpire. In the meantime, Jack Rader, general manager of the Cedar Rapids Colonels, has been so kind to stay on for this segment. We will continue talking baseball. We will continue taking your phone calls, your baseball experience. 866-780-9100, talking a little bit about the affordability of minor league baseball. Maybe you're avoiding that trip to the major league park because of prices, or maybe going to minor league baseball gets you to the major league parks. They work hand in hand a lot of times. Call and tell us your baseball story, 866-780-9100, or you can email us at theexchange@iowapublicradio.org. Jack, one of the questions I wanted to get to, and we ran out of time, how would you describe the relationship between Major League Baseball and the minor league clubs? Has it changed since you started in 91? What I sometimes wonder about the communication between the big league clubs and their minor league affiliates.
I think overall it's very good. It has changed a lot. When I first started in the game in the early 80s, the subsidies that Major League Baseball afforded the minor leagues were a lot more than they are today. I think what you have witnessed over the years is the success of the minor leagues has hurt itself a little bit in that area, in that Major League Baseball is not willing to carry as much of the load as they once did. That being said, I think the game is healthier than it's ever been, certainly at the minor league level, and the relationship is good. And I can only talk to it from our relationship with the Angels, but the communication has always been excellent between our two organizations. They're very friendly, cordial. They bend over backwards, really, for any requests that we might have. So I think it's good. I mean, I know every so often they get together, and obviously they have to come up with a new contract. And it seems like every time that does occur, the minor leagues lose a little bit more. But part of that is just the success the minor leagues have had, and they've been able to absorb some more expenses.
Your club's has had success on the minor league level. Can you attribute it to that stability with the minor league club when you see other teams in the league maybe transitioning a little bit with different relationships they have to build with different clubs?
Yeah, I think so to some degree. I talk a lot with the other general managers in the league, and some of the things that the Angels do surprises them. I mean, the Angels' commitment to have these ball players do things in the community and want to give back to Cedar Rapids. The Angels stepped up big time in the flood of 2008 to help in a number of ways in the Cedar Rapids area. And I just think that, as you mentioned, that stability between the Angels and the Colonels, and maybe there's another word that belongs in there, and that's the word trust. I think the Angels have complete faith in us, and we have complete faith in them. A lot of times we'll extend our contract with them before the current one is over. And some people would say, well, why do you do that? Because maybe you could put a little more pressure on them to put a good team in there. We don't need to do that. I mean, the trust level is there. They're going to send the best club to Cedar Rapids they can. When the kids get ready to move, I mean, we didn't want to lose Mike Trout, the young superstar we had this year. But the Angels' philosophy is when someone has conquered a certain level, they need to move them to the next level because, let's be honest, the goal here is to win at the major league level and develop the players through the minor league system. Now, they do want to win at the minor league system because they believe winning in the minor league system breeds winning at the major league level. But they're not going to keep a kid in Cedar Rapids just to help us win a championship if he deserves to be at another level.
They have bigger priorities.
Exactly.
Is that tough for you in that you cannot really market a player who, you know, if you're marketing a player, he's probably one of your best players. He could very well be on his way up. You really have to avoid marketing an individual player, I would think.
Our theory over the years has been to market the team, and whoever is in that uniform, you're actually marketing the team. If we were doing a lot of things with Mike Trout, and the word was out on how good he was, and we were talking about getting souvenirs and T-shirts, and we kind of held up a little bit on that just because of what you said. And he was so good that the odds of him moving up to a higher division in the second half were pretty large. And in the end, that is what happened. But you're right. You're marketing the team, the community aspect of it, and not so much the individuals. Now, if you look back at all the great players that played here, not only for us but against us, mm-hmm. I mean, it's a who's who of people in baseball. So, I mean, that's fun. You're watching them when they're here, but you know, the Paul Molitors of the world only play in Burlington for so long, and they make their way to the big leagues.
Mike Trout was the Angels' number one pick. Some have said it would have been a good idea to keep him in one place for the entire season. Do you get that sometimes, saying, well, maybe one player would benefit more from a stable one place instead of moving up? Or do you, more times than not, if they are good, are they heading up to the higher Class A or Double A?
Well, there was, I think, some real question with Trout just because of his age. He's only 18 years old and never has been through a full season. So, and he was having fun here. His parents were here two or three different times. They're school teachers in New Jersey. They loved it here. I think it was a pretty good environment for him to develop. He was down here at the University of Iowa Hospitals a couple times to see, visit some kids. And it was a great life learning experience for him. So from that standpoint, I guess I wouldn't have been shocked if they would have left him here to have a great year. But at the same time, he was just so good. I call him Mickey Mantle Jr., if that tells you anything. He was just so good that I think the pressure to move him up to the next level was there.
Talking baseball today on The Exchange, we invite your participation at 866-780-9100. You can email us, theexchange@iowapublicradio.org. Van is joining the conversation from Cedar Rapids. Van, welcome to The Exchange.
Oh, thank you for taking my call. My experience in minor league baseball is following them wherever I've lived. I grew up in the Cedar Falls, and Waterloo had a single-A team back then, the Royals most of the time, and lived in the Quad Cities. Used to go to that beautiful spot there on the Mississippi and watch them, and lived in Chattanooga and watched the Lookouts. And I've been to 13 major league ballparks, but I'll tell you what, the Colonels here in Cedar Rapids are the best entertainment value in the whole city. And I mean, that's sincerely. We were there last Friday night, as a matter of fact, and saw they lost 11 innings, so it was a great game, and Jack and the gang do a great job. The prices are affordable, and it's a great game on the field. They play hard baseball.
Van, do you visit the major league parks as well?
To be honest, I haven't gone in years because I'm still upset about the strike. But, yeah, I've been to I lived in Cleveland for a while. I used to go to the Indians games there, and I've been to Wrigley probably 25 times over the years. But I just really enjoy the minor league game. It's a lot of fun. It's more affordable. You can go in your home in 20 minutes, and you still see a great brand of baseball. I'm just a baseball fan.
Van, we appreciate your comments today. 866-780-9100 or theexchange@iowapublicradio.org. Jack, I wanted to get back to the whole player transition through the minor leagues. Talk a little bit about the process and how some of these players in the spring come to Cedar Rapids and they're living. Where do they live? How are families found with that whole process for their living experience while in Cedar Rapids?
Well, first of all, I'd like to thank Van for his comments. I tell you, it's comments like those that really motivate our staff. I mean, that's what sometimes you're at the ballpark 100 hours a week, and sometimes when it's raining, you can be frustrated, and obviously it can be a long day. But, boy, when you hear comments like that, that's what really makes it all worthwhile. So I really appreciate that from Van. As far as the players, I think we have – if not the best, certainly one of the best host family scenarios in all of minor league baseball. We have a gentleman by the name of Lanny Peterson that has run that for us for a number of years now, and he actually goes to spring training and meets with the prospective players, and he's got a regular question and answer sheet, which, you know, if they're allergic to dogs or cats or anything like that, and he just does a marvelous job. He picks the players up when they come to the airport, takes them to the hotel, makes the reservations for them there. They get 3 days at the hotel before they move in with the host family. And it really is incredible the amount of time and effort that he puts into that. But it shows. The players are very receptive and thankful. What's really neat is I went to spring training this year down in Arizona for the first time in, I believe it was 20 years. Mm. And to see all the host families that are actually down there to see the ballplayers, the relationships that they form, the bonds that they form with these players is incredible. And you may see them out to eat at night, and they're with four different players. Well, it's four different players from four different years. I mean, it's pretty incredible the relationships that they form, and it really does help. Our players are pretty young. You know, we're looking at some kids. Trout was 18. And to have that stable family atmosphere while they're in Cedar Rapids, I think, is imperative.
What about the transition with the number of Hispanic players in the game? They come to the Midwest, Cedar Rapids. Is that a tough transition for some?
Well, it probably is to some degree. But again, we have people, Tom and Abby Pomeroy, Linda Dvorak. I mean, these are people, host families that have the ability to communicate with these kids. And it always seems the Angels do a good job with that also, but probably a lot of that is done in spring training. But there's always two or three kids, it seems like, on every team that can help bridge that communication gap. So, yeah, I think it's a bit of an issue, but for the most part, things run pretty smoothly.
Let's talk a little bit about this year's club. You won the first half division in the Western Division in the Midwest League. Talk a little bit about this. Some people may be checking the standings and see the Colonels have not played that many games. Well, there's two halves. Talk about the process in the Midwest League.
Well, I think it's a good process. You do have a split season. And again, with as much player movement, Michael talked a little bit about all the player moves in Des Moines. Well, it's not a whole lot different as you go down the ladder. We get a lot of moves too. So if you have a bad first half, you wipe the slate clean and you start over 0-0 in our case in late June. But the beauty of it is that you have two different halves to qualify for the playoffs. By qualifying in the first half, that's a big advantage because we get home field advantage in the first round. And by finishing first, we'll play whoever finishes second in our division the second half. Where it really comes to be a big advantage is we've got the whole second half to promote the playoffs. We know when we're going to play. We can sell tickets. Again, a big advantage for us.
Talk about the schedule, too. There's got to be dates that you, I would think, have to take advantage of. How kids in school and they go back to school. I'm sure that affects your promotions and how this whole schedule is laid out during the season.
Yeah, I was listening to the general manager of the Lansing Ball Club when we were up there playing. He was doing a radio interview with our radio announcer, John Rogers, and he said that they only promote and really put a key emphasis on 30 games of the entire season. That's out of 70. And the other 40, they just kind of open the gates. We don't really take that approach, although you're right, there are key games that really go a long ways. We average 4,000 fans per game on Saturday nights. So that's a big night of the week for us. But what we try and do is the nights that aren't as good, Monday, for example, has notoriously been a bad night for us to draw. So we moved a lot of our Monday games to noon games because noon games have really been a big hit in Cedar Rapids over the last 20 years. And that's helped substantially this year by playing a lot of games on Monday. Michael mentioned the Kraft Wrappers on Tuesday nights. That's really helped our attendance on Tuesday night. So we try and take every day. Sunday we've turned into a family day. Mix that in with entertainment. But we do try and promote 70 games, not 30 in Cedar Rapids.
You talk about the relationship with the community, school trips, businesses booking nights at your ballpark. How important is that, and how often? I've been to games before where the telephone company or a local organization is there. How often does that happen?
all the time. The schools are really key for us. I think we had 40-some school nights before school was out. All the individual schools have a night at the ballpark. I think we have 15 community nights this year at that stadium. So all of those things are important. If you come to a noon game, you'll see a lot of schools that are there, or you'll see once school's out, you start to get into the daycares and day camps. A lot of the companies will book those. A lot of the senior citizens, maybe for the noon games, it's a nice time to bring some of the people from the senior citizen homes out to a game. So it's really a comprehensive effort. People have always asked me, well, who do you attract? And I always say, well, anyone from 3 to 103. And that really is our target market. Again, it's the beauty of baseball, but we really do try and go after all age groups.
Kathy is joining the conversation from Iowa City. Good afternoon, Kathy.
Hi. I've got one you probably haven't heard before.
Let's hear it.
We had a family reunion in June. We bought tickets to the ball game because I thought nothing could be more fun than that. And we had, I think about 24 people from all over the country, New York, Seattle, several from Canada. They went from age 3 to 70. And it rained. It was a horrible, big black clouds came over in the middle of the first inning. And I thought, oh no, this is terrible. And everyone loved it. We stood there and watched this torrential rain come down and lightning. And it was very exciting. Everyone told me it was the best night they'd ever had. And they all thought the food was an incredible bargain. They thought everything tasted great and they thought it was very cheap.
What night was that?
That was in June, about the 19th, something like that.
Okay. Well, there's been so many rainy nights, it could have been anyone.
Well, it was a really scary one, and we watched the tarp come out, and we watched them trying to bail behind the plate, and it was really fun. I felt really bad at first, but we had a ball.
That's great.
Every single person wrote an email to me later and said that was the most fun. They'd been to lots of ball games, but that one was really fun. They loved the park.
Sounds like you may be going back sometime, Kathy.
Oh, we go. Well, I'm in Iowa City. We go all the time.
We appreciate your comments today.
Okay.
Thank you.
Congratulations on a great ballpark.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Veterans Memorial Stadium, even a great place to enjoy an incoming weather front, possibly.
Yeah, she probably had more fun than we did on that one.
866-780-9100, talking baseball today on The Exchange. Just a few minutes left. Tim McClelland was scheduled to be on this segment, the West Des Moines resident and Major League umpire. Tim, unfortunately, could not join us today, which reminds me, Jack, I wanted to bring this up in relation to Tim, umpires. We talk about the ball players. This is a training ground for gentlemen wanting to work their way up through the ranks to become major league umpires.
Yeah, the older I get, the younger they look. Sometimes they get on the elevator and I think it's the bat boys heading down to the locker room and it's the umpires. But it is a training ground. I mean, there's two baseball umpire schools, and if they're good enough to get out of those schools, then chances are they'll work their way up to the Midwest League. But much like the players, they're working their way up the ladder, but it's tougher from the standpoint there's not that many umpires. There's a heck of a lot more baseball players on the field than there are umpires. So it is tough. We work with a two-man crew in the Midwest League, and that's great training because obviously it's a lot tougher to work a game with two people than four or whatever the case might be. So, and again, they are young. They make mistakes just like the players, but overall they do a great job and they're great young men.
1-866-780-9100 or email us theexchange@iowapublicradio.org. An email from David. What is the state of minor league baseball across the state, like the Quad Cities River Bandits Modern Woodman Park, home of the Cardinals Single A affiliate? He says it's a gorgeous park right on the Mississippi with the Centennial Bridge just beyond right field. The ballpark was highlighted in USA Today as one of the top 10 minor league destination ballparks in the U.S. That is from David. Beautiful park down in the Quad Cities.
Oh, it is. I enjoy going down there to watch a game. I like to walk out into the right field, beyond the right field fence, because you can sit there look over the right field fence and watch the game. And if you want to turn around and watch the boats go up and down the river, you can do that in the bridge. So it's a terrific setting. They've done very well down there. It's a beautiful park since it's been redone. I would say overall, the state of minor league baseball in all of them, Burlington's put a lot of money into their club and their stadium. Clinton has done the same. Of course, we all know how successful the Iowa Cubs have been, but I would say everybody in the state of Iowa is really sitting in a pretty good place.
And what is it about Iowa? You look at some of the other states. Is it unique for Iowa, the population we have, a smaller populated state, yet Des Moines, Cedar Rapids, Clinton, Burlington, used to be Waterloo. Dubuque even had a team, right. I think, years ago. Does that speak to the popularity of the game in this state?
I think it's always been a good baseball state. The people of Iowa have always supported these programs. I mean, they go back a long time. We were talking about the history of Cedar Rapids. It goes back to 1890, professional baseball. Clinton and Burlington have long runs. So I do think it's something that has been around for a long time. And you have to give all the teams in the state credit because they've had good shepherds to run these programs for all these years for it to remain that viable.
Jack Rader, you are retiring. What's ahead for you after you walk away from the ballpark?
You know, I don't know. I guess when I leave there on November 1st, I'll think about it. People ask me that all the time, and I really haven't. We want to have the best possible year we can have this year, do the very best we can, and then, you know, when it's over, it's over, and then I'll look, you know, at that point at what the rest of my life will hold. But for right now, I'm just worried about the rest of this season.
Jack, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Jack Rader, General Manager of the Cedar Rapids Colonels. The Exchange is produced by Catherine Perkins and Alex Hoyer. Production assistance today from Lindsay Moon. Technical support from Dennis Reese and Sarah McCammon. The Exchange is a production of Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Jeff Schmidt. Thanks for joining us.